Okay, first and foremost, thank you to David and Adina Barth for sponsoring tonight's classes, all the classes of the Beit Midrash program, in loving memory of her father, Albert Pincus, whose yahrzeit, I believe, is on Thursday. Might be Wednesday or Thursday. Baruch Hashem, our learning should be le'ilui nishmaso, an elevation of his soul. Okay. Let us jump back into where we started, where we left off. Mishle Yud Daled. Next week is not Mishle. Next week is a Legends and Lessons week. I don't know who it's going to be yet. I haven't even looked at it. I'm still trying to prepare for it today. So, Mishle Yud Daled, 14:6. We're up to the sixth pasuk. Yud Daled Vav. Some interesting concepts here, and obviously because my head is in Pesach mode, so the first pasuk I think relates to something I talked about over Pesach. Bikesh leitz chachma v'ayin. The leitz, like a leitzan, is a clown, someone who mocks, right? Bikesh leitz chachma v'ayin. The clown, the mocker, seeks out wisdom and cannot. V'ayin. Ayin means there is none. It's nothing. There's nothing there. V'das l'navon nakel. But wisdom or knowledge, I should say, interesting different uses of the words, but knowledge to the one who understands is going to be easy. It says here, but knowledge comes easily to the intelligent man. Okay, so what does this mean? I'm pretty sure I have. Okay, good. So there are different ways of understanding this. If you look at Rashi, so Rashi says, you don't have a Rashi, but if we had a book that we all had, common on the same page, we'd be able to see Rashi together. When he's looking for wisdom, he can't find it, right? If you are a mocker, right? Someone who always makes light of every situation, you can't buckle down and be serious about anything. So then even when you need to know something, you won't be able to easily grasp it. Right, the type of person who always makes a joke out of everything, likes to be lighthearted, which is good for the right context, for the right situation. But if you need to be able to look at something seriously, you're not going to acquire wisdom. That doesn't mean he's not going to know something. Right, later on in the pasuk, das l'navon nakel. Das, as we know, is knowledge. That's just in terms of having actual pieces of information in your head. But chachma is deeper than that. Chachma, we've talked about before, is wisdom. Right? You think of a wise man, you think of someone who's able to understand and apply and give etzah, give advice to other people. That's chachma. So bikesh leitz chachma v'ayin. The one who scoffs at everything, the one who makes light of serious issues, and he's going to now try to find chachma, he's going to try to become wise. So then there's not going to be anything there for him. You know, this is a hard one to really apply, at least in the way that Rashi explains it, because everyone picks up things along the way, even if you're a scoffer and you go through life trying to make light of everything. So there's what to learn from there also. So it's not necessarily a full-blown rule here, but it's something that, at least according to Rashi, it's sort of a warning sign. If you're going to always be mocking other things, so you're not going to develop a worldview infused with wisdom. You're going to, develop a worldview where everything's trying to make light of other things. And I guess in a tangent for a second, I find that oftentimes in the world we live in, everything's trying to make people feel good. You know, bikesh leitz is more mockery than sort of positive feeling. But some people can't deal with serious things. You know, the world we live in, we try to make everyone feel good all the time. And even if something's uncomfortable, we'll sort of position what we want to tell them in a way that makes them feel okay. Or we'll tell a joke to give it, to give it some levity so that the person doesn't feel so bad or that it's not such a difficult thing to hear. So here, bikesh leitz chachma v'ayin, that's not a way to really infuse a person with wisdom. You're shielding them from true depth of understanding. That's one way to understand. That's according to Rashi. There's another way to understand it, and it really comes down to the word ayin, right? The word ayin here is with an aleph, right? I said ayin, maybe you would think I, right? With an ayin, like ayin, but ayin here is with an aleph, which means that there's nothing there. Bikesh leitz chachma v'ayin. He's seeking out, the mocker The clown is seeking out wisdom, va'ayin, and there's nothing. What does that mean, there's nothing? So according to Rashi, what that meant is there's nothing that he can't find the wisdom. But I think another possibility is that bikesh le'tzchachma va'ayin, he's seeking out wisdom, but he's really not seeking out wisdom. Right? Bikesh le'tzchachma, he's sort of asking the right questions, but he doesn't really care. Right? He's just, you know, using it as a mockery. You know, you get this with teenagers or people that are off the derech a lot. You know, they ask this question and that question, and, you know, they think they really stumped you, and then you give them a good answer, and then they won't accept it. They'll ask you a different question. Right? And because the point of their questioning is not really to understand. Right? They're bikesh leitz chachma va'ayin. But they're really not asking. Right? They're seeking it out, but they're not really asking. And this is why, I guess Steve probably sees this on the source sheet, I brought up which question that we talked about on the Haggadah. If you had to guess, the Russia.
It's quite interesting.
Right? What's interesting about the Russia's question, there are a lot of things interesting about the Russia's question. It's always easy to make a villain out of somebody so that we can learn from them. Right? That's probably the easiest way, because we know there's something wrong, now we have to find it. Right, it's harder to make lessons out of people who are doing the right thing, because you don't necessarily know if they're doing anything wrong. But when we call the Russia the sun, the second sun, when we call him evil, we know he's doing something wrong, and therefore it's sort of everyone's prerogative to figure out what did the evil sun do wrong, what was his wickedness, right? So Russia mahu omer maha avoda hazos lochem. That sounds like a pretty reasonable question. What is the avoda of this for you? In fact, this is not only not an evil question, this is actually a question that the Torah itself anticipated. I spoke about this, for those who think that this is deja vu, I spoke about this on the first day of Yontif in Shul. But Cherna wasn't there, and Marsha wasn't there, and for those of you who have a short-term memory loss, so maybe it's good for Chazara too. So I spoke about this pasuk, Ma'avodah Zos Lachem. The Torah tells us, V'amartem Lachem, that your child will ask you, where is this pasuk? No, that's not it. It's in the end of Parshas Bo. Just trying to find the words now. I don't see it here. I think it's earlier on in the Parsha. Tom's question is at the end of the Parsha. This question is in the middle of the Parsha. There it is. This is in Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Chafav in Shmos. The middle of Parsha's Bo, the middle of Chamishi. V'haya ki yomru alechem inechem maha avoda hazos lachem. What is this avoda that you're doing? So we take that in the Haggadah, and then we basically sort of, we hit him over the head. How could you ask such a question? What do you mean, how could you ask such a question? The Torah asked that question. We're expecting that question. That's a question that the Torah told us is going to happen. The Russia is now being punished because he's asking the question? Why are we punishing the Russia for such a question? What's even more interesting, right, this is Dvar Torah's for the Haggadah for next year. For those of you who... I once asked, I was once in the YU library, and I saw some of my rabbinic colleagues there. Yeshiva University has a big rabbinic floor, where it has a lot of svarim there. So I saw them preparing for their, I guess it was their Shabbos Shuvah Drasha. And I said to them, what are you preparing for Shabbos Shuvah Drasha? It's not, you know, it's not for a while, it's not for a few months. He said, you start preparing for your Shabbos Shuvah Drasha after Yom Kippur. That's what... Right, you start preparing for all of the week. So this too, the Haggadah. Here's the Devar Torah for the Haggadah for next year. So the pasuk says, "Ma'avodah zos lachem." So first of all, we're giving the Rosh such a hard time for a question which is in the Torah. We're giving the Hashem says he's supposed to ask this question. Then. But more than that, not only is his question in the Torah, there's even an answer in the Torah. The answer the Torah tells us. We're supposed to tell him about the Korban Pesach. And instead, what do? We hit him in the mouth. We tell him that he's being a heretic. So number one, why are we being so tough on the Rasha generally? His question is warranted based on the Torah's own psukim. And number two, why are we not answering the Rasha in the way that the Torah tells us to answer the Rasha? You can find it in Barsha's Bo, in the fifth Aliyah. It's right there. So what's going on? So all of it comes down to how the Torah phrases the question. If you look carefully at the question, as opposed to the question by the Tam, the simple son or the perfect son, depending how you translate it that year, depending on your mood. So then the pasuk says kiyish al chabin chalemor. The pasuk says when your child will ask you, mazos, right? He'll ask you the question. But when it comes to the Rasha, what does it say? V'haya ki yomru aleichem b'neichem. Ki yomru, when they say to you. So that's interesting. I said this over in my drasha that my six-year-old has this tendency, but it happened yesterday to my four-year-old. My four-year-old said, I want to tell you something, Abba, and then ask me a question. I said, no, you don't want to tell me something. You want to ask me something. And it's right, if you want me to engage and to respond, so you have to say, I want to ask you something. Telling me something is, okay, I'll listen, but I not necessarily, you don't want me to say anything back. So here too, the Torah doesn't introduce the Rasha's question. The wicked son's question is not introduced. Ki yish'al. It doesn't say, when he asks you. The pasuk says, ki yomru, when they tell you. The Rasha tells us, mahavod azos lachem. He tells us, what is this work for you? Meaning, he doesn't want an answer. He's just trying to make sure you heard his question. He's interrogating. He's challenging. He's criticizing. It's a rhetorical question. He doesn't really want the answer. Because that's what the pasuk says. Ki yomru aleichem. When the Rasha tells you this question. And what does the pasuk say afterwards? Va'amartem. It doesn't say va'amartem lo. You don't say back to him. Just va'amartem. You should say to whoever wants to listen. You don't talk back to the Rasha. And that's why in the Haggadah we don't answer him. Because first of all, he's not asking a question. And second of all, the Torah never tells us to answer to him. The Torah tells us to say. So the same thing this pasuk, I think. I couldn't find any mafarshim that explained the pasuk like this. But this is presumably what Shlomo Melech says when he says, Bikesh leitz chachma v'ayin. Right? The clown, the mocker, is seeking wisdom v'ayin, but he's not really. But it's really nothing. He's asking a question, but doesn't really want to know. Right? You know, this is, as I said before, the teenagers, you deal with anyone who's spent enough time on NCS wires, you'll get these questions. Why? How could it be, dinosaurs? How could it be the flood? How could it be, slavery? All these questions. It doesn't matter what you say to them. It literally does not matter what answer. You could give them the juiciest Gemara. You could give them the most satisfactory, whole sheer, the whole class about what they're asking. They don't really want the answer, right? What they want is to question. And for some reason or another, they think that their question is like the greatest question that they, that the debtor came to man, and then no one had thought of it beforehand. There's a tendency for especially teenagers, as you might know, to think that they know everything. And therefore they ask these questions. And I remember one rabbi used to tell me that his response to them was always, I never thought about that. And he would just like throw away his yarmulke. And say, that's a great, great question. No one's ever thought about that before. Right? Because when you ask a question, you have to have a certain sense of humility that you're not the first person to ask this question. You're not the first person to ask, how could it be that God said that the Jews could be slaves? How could it be that there were dinosaurs? You're not the first person to ask these questions. And therefore, you have to approach it with a certain sense of humility. But the truth is that they're not really looking for the answers. They're asking questions as sort of like a placeholder to say that I don't want to be Jewish or I don't want to do this stuff. Right? And that's really where you have to answer the question. It's not about what they're saying, it's about what they mean when they say it.
I just
got a
call
and I got a second vaccine scheduled for Wednesday. Okay, Mazel Tov. Thank you. So that's the first pasuk here. Bikesh leitz chachma v'ayin, that the wise, the mocker, is not really asking the question. V'das lenavon nakel. But the wisdom or the knowledge for the one who understands comes easily. That person is always seeking out Wisdom is always seeking out understanding, and therefore for him, it's not difficult for him to actually know things. And presumably, this could also sort of reflect back on the Bikesh. Maybe I said Bikesh was really like a literal question, but maybe here also, Vidas Lanavo Nakel, that when the wise one is asking a question, his questions really are answered easily because he's not really going to challenge as much. The Ibn Ezra says, "V'ayin va'avor hit asko b'davar leitzanos liyuchal adata." This is more in line with what Rashi said before. Okay, moving on to Pasuk Zayin. Lech mineged liish kesil. Lech mineged is such an interesting phrase, and obviously I'm in not only Pesach mode but the Four Sons mode. What does the word mineged remind us of? Kineged arba banim dibra Torah. You ever notice that? Kineged arba banim. When we introduce the four sons at the Seder, we say keneged, in opposition to. Neged means opposite. Right here, it means lech mineged. Go, sort of, you see the translation here in the Sefaria. I'm sure other translations have similar phrasing. Lech mineged, go far away from them. Leish kasil, from a foolish person. It's kind of interesting, because the word mineged is often used in a positive sense. Or at least in a positive context, I should say, not in a positive sense. Where else do we find the word neged? So we just said the four sons is introduced. Keneged arba banim dibra Torah. That you're supposed to... what was it, Cherna? Perfect. That was my next example. That right, Hashem says, I'm going to make for man an ezer kenegdo. There's something about a person being keneged, which is actually, you know, a developmental tool. Right? Ezer kenegdo means you have to work with somebody else. That will help you become a better person. Similarly, when it comes to the four sons, when you're a parent and you have to relate to your different children in different ways, that makes you a better person. Right? There's a certain flexibility. That's another Divar Torah for next year, maybe. What the word is, kineged arba banim Divar Torah. The importance of asking questions or answering questions or dealing with each child according to their own abilities and understanding. Here, however, it seems to be more in line with sort of your typical translation of the word mineged means in the opposition of. Lech mineged, go to the opposite of an ish kesil, away from he who is a foolish person. Lech mineged leish kesil. Okay, ubal yadat asif sedas. This is a tough one because there seems to be some words missing in the pasuk. But you could say that it's one read-through, right? We get so caught up in Shlomo HaMelech's phrasing, we often think that there's one phrase and then there's a second phrase, which is sort of the flip side or the reflection of the first one. Here it doesn't sound like that. Maybe it's actually a read-through. Lech mineged leish ksil ubal yadat asif sedas. Unclear. Here, there's an interesting translation here in the... In the Sefari, it says, keep your distance from a dullard, for you will not learn wise speech. Ubal yadata sifseidas. It's a tough read because learning is, the word is lomed, right? It should be ubal yilmad sifseidas. For ubal yadat, bal usually means some kind of negative phrase, and you will not know sifteidas. Right, so it almost, if we were going to translate this pasuk literally, what it would say is, go away from a foolish person, and you will not know the speech of knowledge. I mean, that doesn't make sense. Presumably, what it should say is, v'yadat sifseidas. When you get away from the fool, you'll start to understand wisdom. You'll start to understand knowledge. Here it's saying that you won't understand Sif Se Das. So if you look at Rabbeinu Yonah has a different take than most other Mepharshim. He says, V'chein harchik mechevras mishalo yadata oso b'sif Se Das. Go, stay far away from those, from a group of people that you don't know are Sif Se Das. Meaning, lech mineged li'ish k'sil ubal yadata is a read-through. Right, stay away from those who are foolish and you don't know that they're wise. It's kind of an interesting read, but I'll explain it in more plain English. What it means is that you shouldn't involve yourself with a fool who you don't yet know is wise. Meaning, what's the barometer or what's the threshold of who you hang out with? For some people, the threshold of who you hang out with is, are they not bad, right? Are they, do they do bad things or do they don't do bad things, right? Especially when you're raising kids, well, those kids are the bad kids, right? You stay away from the bad kids. But the question is, are you trying to associate with the good kids? Right? That's the question. So here, if you only have the first part of the pasuk, Lech mineged le'ish ksil, stay away from the foolish person. Okay, well, what about the person who's not necessarily smart, but he's also not necessarily foolish? What about that guy? Right? Let's say he makes mistakes, but he's not, you know, he doesn't, chas v'shalom, get involved with drugs and other immoral decisions. But he's not necessarily learning. He's not necessarily davening. He's not necessarily, you know, the greatest at how he treats other people. But he doesn't do any bad stuff, right? He's not, you know, he doesn't fall under any of the stigmatized categories of ksil, of a fool. So says Shlomo HaMelech, Lech mineg l'ish ksil u'bal yadat asif sedas. Not just stay away from the fool, but also stay away from those who you don't yet know that they're wise, right? They have to prove to you that they can act. They have a certain level of competence or a certain level of knowledge that you want to associate with them, right? We're not talking about, you know, kiruv work, and we're not talking about, you know, teachers and student relationships. We're talking about who are going to be your friends, right? It says Rabbeinu Yonah, harchek mechavra mechaveret mishelo. Or maybe it's chibart, chiberet. It's unclear what this word is. But distance yourself from someone shelo yadata oso besiv sedas, who you do not yet know that they have sifte dat. As I said before, speak. They don't speak wisely. Al kena tatzarch lachush l'safko, because they haven't yet proven themselves. So then you have to worry. You have to worry about what they might do to you or might not do for you. Shelo titchaber elav an shetachkor elav im hu nizhar bedvarav shelo legal osod. Until you can figure out that this person is someone who can keep a secret. Not necessarily because you have secrets to keep, but because he's a trustworthy person. V'shelo lecharif ulevazos. And the way that he speaks is not harshly and critical. Umikas umigava v'godel levav. That they're not speaking out of anger, and they don't speak with a haughtiness, right? You don't necessarily know that they're you might already know that they're not doing bad things, but you don't necessarily know that they're speaking wisely. Right, this is sort of the pasuk, or I guess according to Rabbeinu Yonah, is saying there's sort of the physical world, the physical things that they might do poorly, and then there's the verbal world that they might speak poorly. So it says Rabbeinu Yonah, that's the two stages here. Lech mineged le'ish ksil, distance yourself physically in the physical world, geographically, be distant from a person who's foolish, who makes foolish decisions, who does poor behavior, who misbehaves, but also ubal yadat asif sedas, also distance yourself from those who don't speak nicely, who don't speak properly. That's what it means. Bal yadata sif sedas. If you don't yet know that you can trust those people, so those are the people you want to also distance yourself. V'hinei shetziv laharchik min hasafik mechavras asher lo mishelo noda b'sif sedas u'mishenoda shuksil. Someone you know is not behaving properly. Someone you know is not speaking properly. Those are the people you want to distance yourself from, even if it's a safek. Right, you have to already know that they have sif sedas. You have to already know that they speak wisely. We've spoken before about Brené Brown's idea of trustworthiness. Have I talked about the marble jar yet? This is a long, you know, I don't know if I've talked about it. I think I gave this over in Kansas once. I don't know if I ever spoke about it here. And remember the marble jar? No? So Brené Brown was once in her trying to appease her daughter.
I know about the marble jar where you put the most important things in first. I mean, right. You have to, because if you put the trivial stuff in first, then there's no room for the big things.
But okay, that's a different thing.
It's getting your priorities straight. Yeah, that was an allegory that I saw with their marbles.
Yeah, that's a good one, but that's not the one I was referring to.
Yeah, there might be different ones.
Yeah, so she has her own she has her own thing. It's on. Give me a second here. Let me find it. Pretty sure. Okay, yeah, here it is. Just want to make sure. Yeah, she's talking about her daughter Ellen. In the middle of third grade, Ellen had her first experience with betrayal. In many elementary school settings, third grade is a big move. Students are no longer clustered with the grade K to 12, K to second grade. They're now navigating the grade 3 through 5 group. During a recess, she had confided in a friend from her class about a funny, slightly embarrassing thing that had happened to her earlier in the day. By lunchtime, all the girls in her peer group knew her secret and were giving her a hard time. It was an important lesson, but also a painful one, because up to that point, she'd never considered the possibility that someone would do that. When she came home, she burst into tears and told me that she was never going to tell anyone anything ever again. Her feelings were so hurt. Listening, I felt my heart aching for her. To make matters worse, Ellen told me that the girls were still laughing at her when they returned to the classroom, so much so that her teacher separated them and took some marbles out of the marble jar. Ellen's teacher had a large, clear glass vase that she had the kids referred to as the marble jar. She kept a bag of colored marbles next to the jar, and whenever the class was collectively making good choices, she would throw some marbles into the jar. Whenever the class was acting out, breaking the rules or not listening, the teacher would take marbles out of the jar. If and when the marbles made it to the top of the jar, the students would be rewarded with a celebration. She goes through her own personal stuff. I don't know if people aren't familiar with this book, but she pivots between what she wants to say and what she really should say. So she says, as much as I wanted to pull Ellen close and whisper, not sharing with those girls is a great idea. That way, they'll never hurt us again. She crosses out the word us, and then she writes the word you, right? Because she felt personally pained by it. I put my fears and anger aside and started trying to figure out how to talk to her about trust and connection. As I was searching for the right way to translate my own experiences of trust and what I was learning about trust from research, I thought, the marble jar, perfect. I told Ellen to think about friendships like marble jars. Whenever someone supports you or is kind to you or sticks up for you or honors what you share with them as private, you put marbles in the jar. When people are mean, disrespectful, share your secrets, marbles come out. When I asked her if it made sense, she nodded her head and with excitement said, I've got marble jar friends. When I asked her to tell me about it, she described 4 friends who she could always count on, who knew some of her secrets would never tell, and who told her some of their secrets too. She said, there are friends who ask me to sit with them even if they've been asked to sit at the popular kids' table. She talks about her relationship with her, and she talks about what's important for a marble jar. I've used this before to talk about how trust is built by little things, the little marbles, as opposed to one big marble. You don't just fill up the jar with one big marble. You fill it up with little marbles. She goes on to talk about, little things where her friends remembered her mother was in the hospital, or her friend remembered her birthday, like little things, like not the people that pick you up on the side of the road when you're in trouble, right? That's after you built up trust. It's the little things that build the trust up. So she talks about the marble jar, and she talks about in terms of sort of creating trust is the ability to have people that you know are not betraying you in any way. So this is what I think of when I see this pasuk. Bal yadata sifsei das. You know that they have a trustworthy mouth, right? They can be trusted on. You already established that they're trustworthy with who they speak to, how they speak about you, what they're going to say with you. So presumably, the Shlomo Melech is basically saying you have to build up trust with somebody else, and you have to already be it already has to be proven to you, right? Ubalia data sifse das. Stay away from the people that you don't yet know are trustworthy in the way that they speak. Right? So lech mineged, that's the physical separation. But bal yadata sif seidas is a separate type, which is a sort of like a conversational trustworthiness. Not just that you can trust their activities, but also the way that they speak. So very interesting. I also talked then about sliding doors. Anyone know that concept of sliding doors? It's actually, I didn't continue reading, but she talks about, I believe it's John Gutman. People know John Gutman's work? He's like a relationship guy. Famous for like being able to tell if couples will divorce after seeing them for 5 minutes. Whatever, he's got a whole thing. Either way, not for now. He talks about sliding door moments and where you have to sort of, there are windows where an opportunity opens up to create trust and then slowly will pass by. And if you don't, you know, as we would say in Yiddish, chaperein, so you're going to lose that opportunity, right? You have to sort of harness that ability, that moment. And I think about it a lot because, you know, in Rabbanus, especially when you have so many different congregants, you know, it's not always easy to connect to them. So when you find there's an opportunity where a person could really use a phone call, a person could really use sort of like a little greeting of some kind. So you have to get that opportunity because you don't know the next time something's going to happen with that congregant where you can make a connection. Either way, it's not just a rabbi thing. It's for everybody and all in everyone's lives and in relationships. You know, that's why birthdays are so important. You know, sometimes, you know, I think of birthdays, I'm like, what's the point? It's just another number, it's just another whatever. But the truth is, it's an opportunity. It's a sort of, it's a sliding door, right? Sliding door, it's going to close. If you don't get in that window, you're going to lose that opportunity to connect. And as I said before, it's the little things, it's the little marbles that build up trust. So that's how you know. Bal yadata sif seidas, you'll know it after those little marbles build up after a while. You'll know about the person's ability to trust. A person's ability to speak properly and to hold your secrets, even if you don't have any. Okay, Pasuk Ches, Mishle Yud Dalet Ches, 14:8. Chachmas Arum Hevin Darko. Now, this is something that we've talked about before. The word Arum, I've talked about this with other people in Shul also. Parshas Bereishis comes up because of the snake. The word Arum is sort of like a I don't know if ambiguous is the right word, but it's a flexible word. It can either mean naked, it can mean cunning, or it can mean calculating. Right? There's an interesting play on words by Adam and Chava that they were naked, and I believe it also refers to the snake as Arum, as cunning. No? Anyone know what I'm talking about? I believe that's true. I don't think I'm making that up.
Those are almost opposites,
right?
I mean, when you're cunning, you're hiding things. You're right. You know, you're secretive. You're naked. You're
right,
there.
Right. Good. I like that. There's an interesting contrast there for sure. I'm just trying to. Yeah, the first pasuk in the third perek in Bereishis of the Torah, the Hanachash Haya Arum. Right after introducing all the animals, then it says the snake. Let me see how Rashi says Arum. Doesn't say anything. So I think this is how. Oh no, he does say something. Ma inen zelakan hayalo lismach vayas laadam ishlo kassel zor ve'avashim alam enchem ezra sibekav atzanach shalim rabo some arum v'asukim mitashvishvay. Yeah, Rashi brings down both in explanations. The snake was either naked or he was cunning. So that's what it has here. Also, the Mefarshim discuss what this word means. Chachmat Arum, right? So if I were to ask you, which one do you think this means? When it's connected to the word chachma, you would obviously think what it means is it's referring to cunning, right? Cunning wisdom. Chachmat Arum, right? Someone who is cunningly wise or calculatingly wise, right? We usually give a negative connotation to this. Right, so this is why it's a little bit a tough word to translate here, because this is the positive couplet, right? This is the positive phrase from this pasuk, because that you'll see ve'ivelet ksilim mirma, the foolishness or the stupidity of the fool is delusion or deceit. So the first part's positive. So the question is, what's the positivity? So you could understand the word arum to be, as I said before, sort of calculating. Cunning in a positive sense, that you can analyze things in a very sharp way. So that type of chachma is hevin darko, he'll understand his way. Most Mefarshim explain this in sort of the future tense, that they know what there should be going on in the future. They'll know how to make decisions in the future. As opposed to the Velik Silim Mirma, but those who are foolish will continue to be delusional about what they have to do in life. They'll convince themselves of other things. The Malbim, however, explains that Arum here means naked. That while the person is a Chacham, while they might be wise, there's something missing to his wisdom. Chachmat Arum, it's a fascinating Malbim, because it basically is saying that this is positive in the sense that even though it's not the greatest of wisdom, it's still good enough to get by. Right? That's how he's explaining it. Is that Joe? Hi, Joe. Good to see you there. You don't have to stay. No pressure. V'hikdim l'zeh, says the Malbim. Chachmat Arum hevin darko. Ha'arum eino chacham. He who is naked is not really a wise person. Rotz lomar, lo kibel chukei hachachma mipi chachamim. He didn't really learn wisdom from those who are wise. Leida kol shvileim, to know which ways, which paths, which actions to do. Uvekol zos eino peti. At the same time, he's not peti. We say it in Shabbos Pesukei Zimra, machkimat peti. Right, that the Torah will wisen up a person who's simple. Peti is a simple person, right? Shomer p'taim Hashem. People know that pasuk. Either way, he's also not a simple person. Sheyit patel chol davar, that he can be seduced or convinced to do other things. Ki nichnas bo armumit, when something tricky happens to him. V'sichlo makir lahavchin bein tov l'ra v'emet v'sheker. He's still able to distinguish between what's good and what's bad. He's not the brightest bulb in the batch. He hasn't necessarily learned from the Chachamim, but I guess the better analogy, or the better adage or quip would be the sharpest tool in the shed. Right? He's wise, but he's not the sharpest tool in the shed, which I guess is more in terms of his calculating nature or cunningness. So the pasuk says, Chachmas Arum Hevin Darko, even he who has a nakedness to his wisdom, right? Even he whose wisdom is not really fully there. He's not fully clothed in wisdom, right? He's not somebody who sat at the feet of the rabbis or at the feet of a wise person and figured out how to live life. Despite that fact, even though he's naked, he at least has a Hevin Darko. He has a certain, ability to understand right from wrong. And by the way, I think that this is a positive trait, not only because, even though he's not, fully smart, he's a little bit smart, I think it's actually helpful, the phrase ignorance is bliss. Oftentimes people use that in the sense that ignorance is bliss, that basically you won't be held accountable for anything you do wrong because ignorance is bliss. You can get away with it. So usually ignorance is only bliss in terms of consequence. In terms of doing the right thing, it's not necessarily blissful. But here also, ignorance is bliss in terms of a person's own ability to not get bogged down in details. I've thought about this a lot for other people that I grew up with, in terms of they didn't necessarily have the greatest, the deepest level of understanding, but they were always able to do the right thing. There's a certain I don't know if the word simplicity is, I don't know if that's the simplicity is the right word, but oftentimes we get so bogged down with all of the, all the maneuvers and all the different, logical, gymnastics. Should I do this? Can I do this? What's that person going to think? How can I do it without insulting this person, that person? Some people just live like simplistically. This is a good thing to do. This is a bad thing to do. And that's blissful. And that's, and they don't convince themselves out of doing the right thing because they know that this is a good thing to do. There's a certain beauty in that. So Chachmas Arum, someone who's wise, whose wisdom is naked, is a simple person. Hevin Darko, he knows where he's supposed to go. He knows what he's supposed to do. However, Ivelis Ksilim Mirma, the one who is Ivelet, is sort of the foolishness of a fool. I don't know how to translate it. It says the stupidity of a dullard is delusion. Because this person, even though he might know what the right thing to do is, he doesn't think clearly enough to actually explain to himself that that's what he's supposed to do. Instead, he's going to do all the mirmah. He's all going to do all the delusion. He's going to think that it's still okay to cheat on your taxes. He's going to still, you know, I can get away with this. I can get away with that. And if I just tell this person that thing, then I can get away with doing that. Right? So he'll always delude himself into thinking that he can do other things. This is at least how it seems to be the mainstream approach. Let me just keep reading here in the Malbim Shelo Yelech Al Derech Shel Mesupak Bo Ve'en Yodeh Im Hu Tov Ora Rak Yishtadel Havim B'Sich La'Muz Darko V'Zechach Mashalo. Right, his wisdom is just to know what he has to know right in front of him. Shagam Shelo Kiba Kol Chachim Echam Avdatsko Al Derechim. He doesn't know everything about everything. Abi Yekabal Im Yechacham. He didn't learn from the rabbis of Chol Zeh B'Derech HaPratishu Holech Yasim Leib L'Havino. So in this one moment, he'll understand what he has to do. He'll therefore have a certain level of knowledge in certain aspects, certain activities. Right? There's certain, you meet some people that maybe aren't so bright, but they're the best at what they do. You know, sometimes you think about this when you meet somebody who's maybe in a sort of a more mundane employment. You speak to the bus driver. You speak to the maintenance workers. These people have a vast amount of knowledge in the field they're working in, but clearly they don't have sort of the sophistication to be an accountant or a lawyer or a doctor. But you ask them about how to get around in the city, they'll know every street, they'll know every corner, they'll know exactly where to go at what time and to avoid traffic, and they'll know all this stuff. They have a chachma, that's a chachma. So that's what Malbim is saying, for that path, for their light lot in life, they are Havin Darko. But their chachma is arum, right? They don't have a holistic wisdom. It's naked in that it's very sort of nor narrow. It's a narrow wisdom, but they have a wisdom nonetheless. So that's how the Malbim is explaining it. I think that there's another way to understand this. This is the second time I'm going to disagree with all the Mefarshim that I've seen tonight. But Chachmas Arum Hevin Darko is potentially, and this I think comes into the next pasuk a little bit, is potentially not talking about the future path that they have to go on, but the past that they've already been on. Chachmas Arum Hevin Darko, a person who has a certain nakedness about how they view life, that they're not going to cover things up, that they're not going to, whitewash or, blur what actually happened. They'll be, blunt and honest about things, right? Chachmas Arum, it sort of it reminds me of sort of like just look at it, for what it is, as opposed to covering it up or I'm looking for a better word, looking at it with rosy glasses, whatever the phrases are. There are a bunch of different phrases, but don't look at situations in a way which is going to cover things up and delude you from what the truth is. Right? You have to be honest, even if that honesty is difficult. Right? That's what I think the Chachmas Arum here means, a wisdom of nakedness. Right? You lay it all out. Right? Make sure that you know exactly what happened. So that type of person who's willing to engage in what really happened, not cover it up, not gloss over, not blur it out to make sure, to make it look a little better. So that person is really Hevin Darko. He's really going to understand what exactly he did and didn't do properly. And in that way, he's going to be Hevin Darko. He's going to understand it properly. But if you're going to sort of cover things up, if you're going to, if you're going to misrepresent or, fudge the numbers or exaggerate what you did, so then ultimately it's only going to hurt you in the end of the day. You're not going to be Hevin Darko. You're not going to really know what you did right or wrong, and you're ultimately going to make the same mistakes. On the other hand, Iveles Ksilim Mirma. The stupidity of the dullard is delusion. They're the ones that cover things up. They're the ones that will look back at something that they did wrong and they'll say, well, it was because of this, it was because of that, it was because I was tired that day, it was because, my neighbor, did this to me, it was because this other colleague, didn't do the books right. They'll always come up with some other excuse or some other reason to delude themselves from thinking what they did properly, what they did improperly. That's how I understand the pasuk. And I think when you understand the pasuk that way, you get the next, you get a little bit of an appreciation for the next pasuk, because the next pasuk says in pasuk Tes, Evilim yalitz asham, reparations mediate between fools, ubein yesharim ratzon. There's something I think very profound in here, but again, the words, you know, there are some words here that Shlomo Melech is sort of ambiguously leaving open to interpretation. Evilim yalitz asham. Right? Many people familiar with the word melitz, like a melitz yosher. You hear this oftentimes at a funeral or something like that. Right? Evilim yalitz asham. What's going to, you know, speak on behalf of the fools? That's or melitz is to, I don't know what the word is. How does it say it here? Reparations, okay. How does it say in the
art scroll?
The mediation, yeah. The guilt offering will intercede for fools, right? It'll bring them back together, right? Evilim yalitz asham, right? And asham is like reparations here, I guess, a guilt offering, right? You will have to swap, you know, you did something wrong, so here's, you know, here's compensation for what I did wrong. Meaning, in order for things between, you know, between fools to all work out, you just bribe them a little bit, you know, give them some kind of, you know, give them some kind of gift and make it all better, right? Say sorry, you know, hug it out, and then go on your merry way, right? You don't actually have to talk about what's difficult. You just have to sort of give something over to the other person, you know, smooth it over, and then until next time, you kick the can down the road, basically. Give them a gift, you know, you have a blow up at work, and there's something wrong with these two coworkers aren't working together. So they had a whole blowout, right? And now what do you do? So you say, oh, I'm sorry, here's a gift, and you go on your way. And then the next week, the same thing happens. I'm sorry, here's a gift, go on your way, right? It's just going to perpetuate the same thing. But what? How do you mediate in a healthy way? I think this is what Shlomo Melech is saying. I really do. Bein yesharim ratzon. Again, the word ratzon is just sort of, you know, added on to the end of the pasuk here. But I think what it means is bein yesharim, what brings people who are yashar together, who are yesharim, who go path, who are on the straight path, that's ratzon. Ratzon is when you, ratzon, as we know, means the will. Ratzon is will. Here it says goodwill, right? Because they're trying to explain how could it come, you know, what can bring people together? Presumably goodwill can do it. No, but ratzon literally just means will. I think what it means is that what brings good people together, people who are on the straight and narrow, it's when they're able to actually express what they want. When you're willing to actually bear out what you really want, what is your will, as opposed to covering it up, as opposed to pretending it's this or pretending it's that, or making it seem like you're okay with a gift and therefore you'll go on your way and then you'll still have a problem underneath that relationship. Just tell what your ratzon is. What do you really want? And this is another Brené Brown line that I love. It's more in her second book, not the book I just read, but her second book called Dare to Lead. She talks about, I definitely talked about this before. She says, clear is kind, unclear is unkind. Right? She talks in a working setting. You know, we'll give people projects. We'll tell people to do things. And then they'll come back and they'll do it in a way that we never wanted them to do. Right? So, you know, maybe spouses have this experience too. You know, they told you to go to the supermarket and get something for dinner. And what do you bring back? You bring back, you know, the wrong ingredients. You bring back the wrong cut of meat. You bring back the wrong, you know, seasoning. Well, if you wanted to really, for me to really do what you wanted, so you have to tell me what you really want. If you're not going to be clear, so that's not going to be kind. Clear is kind, unclear is unkind. So what does it mean, bein yesharim? How do you mediate between two people that are sort of sincerely trying to do the right thing? Tell them your ratzon. Tell them what you really want. Bein yesharim ratzon, to mediate between two people that are upright people, just express what you really want. Sometimes we shy away from explaining to people what we really want because we don't want to offend them or inconvenience them or to tell them something that maybe will put them off, that they'll assume that it's insulting to them because, you know, you really wanted one thing and they did another thing. The less explicit, the less clear we are about what we really want, what our true will is, the less we will actually be in with each other. We'll actually bein yesharim. We won't be with each other if we're not going to say our ratzon. That's avilim yalitz asham. Avilim yalitz asham means that fools will just trade reparations. You know, I'll give you this thing, and we'll make it okay for the time being, and we'll kick the can down the road. And in 2 weeks from now, we're going to have another fight and another argument, and we'll do another reparation. I'll give you this, you give me that. We'll make things better because we'll just give things to each other. But you're never telling each other your real ratzon. If you really want to make up with a person, if you really want to have a strong relationship, it's a relationship based on ratzon. It's a relationship that's rooted in really being able to tell the other person what you truly want, what you truly, actually, your real will is. That's when you have ben yesharim ratzon. Yesharim have relationships based on ratzon when you're able to express what you truly want. Again, clear is kind, unclear is unkind. You have to be able to give over your ratzon if you want a ben yesharim relationship. I think that's what Shlomo Melech is saying. Again, no one said that, but you asked me, so that's what you got. Either way, so we did only 4 psukim tonight, but they were packed. Bikesh leitz chachma va'ayin, a mocker is not really asking questions, at least that was my understanding. And then we saw leich mineged le'ish ksil, on the one hand, if somebody's physically doing behaviors that are poor, so then get distance yourself from them. But beyond that, ba'yadata sif seidas, you also have to somehow fill up that marble jar before you hang out with a person completely to know that they're a trustworthy person. Chachmas arum hevin darko, only the person that's really able to strip away all the coverings, all of the blurring, all of the cover-ups in order to understand your real nature, to understand who you are, to make sure you're better in the future, or to understand what you've done in the past, as opposed to Yivel's Ksilim Mirma, the fool is going to cover things up, exaggerate, and misrepresent what he's done, or what he will do, in order to, and thereby he'll never actually improve. And then lastly, coming off of that, Avilim Yalitz Asham, the fools will give reparations to each other to make peace, but ultimately still continue whatever underlying issues they have, as opposed to Ben Yesharim. In order for Yesharim to have good relationships, Yesharim relationship is all about Ratzon, when you're able to truly express to the other person what you really want. That's what's going to create a lasting relationship. Okay, Meretz Hashem will pick up with Mishle Yud Dalet Yud, the 10th pasuk of the Perek, in 2 weeks. Next week we'll have Legends and Lessons. We'll do a Yartzeit Shir, and we will, I guess, stay tuned for the bulletin and the emails to figure out who it's going to be.